There's a global race on for technological dominance. Is the U.S. falling behind? From Marketplace in New York, I'm Sabri Benishore, in for David Brancaccio. Hundreds of U.S. companies today will start testifying in Washington about the Trump administration's plan to impose $200 billion more worth of tariffs on Chinese products. President Trump says the tariffs are needed to fight Chinese theft of intellectual property. But a solid majority of economists in a new survey say tariffs are bad for the U.S. economy. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer joins me now live from Washington. Good morning, Nancy. And what are economists saying exactly?
Well, this survey is from the National Association for Business Economics, or NABE, and it surveyed its members this month, and more than 90% of them said tariffs and threats of tariffs are having, quote, unfavorable consequential impacts on the U.S. economy. There are also concerns about a possible U.S. withdrawal from NAFTA.
These are all Trump administration policies, but business economists aren't apparently too happy with Congress either. Why is that?
Right. 7 out of 10 of the NABE members surveyed said fiscal policy, that is policy from Congress, is too stimulative. They think Congress has cut taxes and increased spending too much, adding too much to the deficit.
And one bright spot for these economists apparently is the Federal Reserve.
That's right. Almost 8 in 10 say Fed policy is, quote, about right. And that is the highest NABE approval rating for the Fed in more than 11 years.
All right. Nancy Marshall-Genzer, thanks so much. And let's do the numbers. The FTSE in London is up 0.4%. Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures are also up in the 2-3% range, with the Dow future up 60 points. The 10-year Treasury yield is at 2.86%. Today is the beginning of what is expected to be a dark time for New Jersey commuters coming into New York. It's the first weekday morning of construction-related lane closures heading into the Lincoln Tunnel, which connects New Jersey and Manhattan. At rush hour, 10,000 cars an hour move through this tunnel. The closures could last years. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman has more.
Every day, 300,000 people wake up in New Jersey, get in their cars, and drive to work in Manhattan. The Hudson River's in between, and aside from the Lincoln Tunnel, there are only two ways, a bridge and another tunnel, to drive to the other side. NYU planning professor Mitchell Moss says there'll be more traffic, and that'll send people to trains, buses, ferries.
I think people will make adaptations very quickly.
Or people can stay in Jersey and telecommute. That's not going to work for one commuter I spoke to as he was heading home before the construction started.
I'm a veteran of the stretch of highway.
That's our host, David Brancaccio.
It is often a nightmare, even if they're filling a single pothole. But when it comes to infrastructure, without pain, there's no gain.
Ditto that, says analyst Adi Tomer at the Brookings Institution. Delaying repairs can lead to catastrophic failures of aging infrastructure.
Those most extreme examples kind of bring home the need that we do focus on maintenance and upkeep to allow our people and goods to move safely.
This construction project is expected to drag on until 2021. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
Not everyone gets a chance to study the economy in school. Anyway, who doesn't need a brush up? Marketplace helps you continue your education in a way that we hope is smart, accessible, and hopefully even a bit fun. Your donation is not only an investment in your own learning, but also in helping us make more people smart about the economy. And that, we think, is good for everyone. To learn how you can help, visit marketplace.org/investors. Thank you.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Palo Alto Networks. As you innovate to transform your business in today's digital world, how do you stay secure? At Palo Alto Networks, our mission is to protect your digital way of life. Whether it's unprecedented opportunities or uncertainties with AI and whatever comes next, we continually deliver innovation to make each day safer and more secure than the one before. More at paloaltonetworks.com.
There's a worldwide race for tech dominance on everything from nanotech to quantum computing. China has an explicit policy to take the lead in artificial intelligence. Israel spends more of its GDP on R&D than any other country. The U.S. is in this race, whether any of us know it or not. Robert Manning has been studying this race. He's a senior fellow at the Atlantic Council and co-author of the Global Innovation Sweepstakes, A Quest to Win the Future. Good morning, Robert.
Morning.
You've said that this moment in time, this moment in our history, should be another Sputnik moment, and that basically we're failing to see it. What do you mean by all of that?
Well, I think we're at the beginning of a major transformation and technology revolution that is, by an order of magnitude, more disruptive than the internet revolution 20 years ago. AI, big data, robotics, biotech, nanoengineering, nanomanufacturing, all these things are converging, and the digital and the real world economy are sort of merging. And this revolution will drive economic growth by the late 2020s, 2030s. And so there's a race on, see, whoever is best at creating and adapting these technologies will be in the strongest position and certainly the most prosperous in terms of their people.
The Federal Deputy Chief Technology Officer, Michael Kratsios, said that, you know, he's very confident in the U.S. ability, and we're doubling down on ensuring our next great inventions are developed here in the U.S. Do you think that confidence is maybe a little misplaced?
If you look, for example, at graduates in science, math, and engineering, the vast majority, probably more than three-quarters of them, are foreign students. After Sputnik, we created, you know, NASA, we put money into our basic R&D, and we put big emphasis on channeling students into these areas. We're not doing that. We haven't had a leadership that's mobilizing the public to move in this direction. We need to rethink our education and training system. We need to have a better social safety net. There's a whole range of things we need to do, and that's going to require a lot of public and private partnership. And I don't see any sense of urgency out there.
What happens if China wins?
I think we need to be careful. It's not like somebody wins absolutely and somebody loses. It's just they're going to do better. They're going to be in a stronger geopolitical position, and that will probably play out in ways we haven't really thought about yet. If we don't get wise to what these trends that are reshaping our economy and are going to affect the way we work, the way we live, and everything else, the future is going to take us by surprise.
Robert Manning is a senior fellow at the Atlantic Council. His report is called The Global Innovation Sweepstakes, A Quest to Win the Future. Thanks, Robert, very much for speaking with us.
Appreciate it. Bye-bye.
In New York, I'm Sabri Benishore with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.